Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Hello, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Rick Hopkins, and I thank you for tuning in. Today's going to be a little different, special show, because all of us, were out of town Wednesday night for a rally, and we're going to play you something I think you'll find interesting. It's a little over a year old, but it's from Hillsdale College, and we sponsor a scholarship for Hillsdale. Hillsdale does not take any federal funding, and they're one of the best, if not the best, conservative colleges there is, and they take no money from the government. So, anyway, this is entitled Political Corruption, Can the Swamp Be Drained? And it was a speech given by Kimberly Strassel, and it was given back in 2018 at the National Leadership Seminar, What is American Greatness? So, anyway, I hope you enjoy Kimberly. We'll be back next week, I'm sure, for the recording, and hope you'll tune in to listen to us then. Right now, enjoy Kimberly Strassel.
Good evening, Hillsdale. We all ready? So, I always feel so honored when Hillsdale does ask me to speak, and it's because while I have not spent an enormous amount of time on campus, it is a place that has become very dear to my heart. I was asked a few years back to come and be a Pulliam Fellow and by John Miller, who is the amazing guy who runs the Journalism Center there at school. And it was 2 weeks that was absolutely transformative to me, because prior to that moment, I could never understand why anyone on God's earth would ever choose to educate children. I have three of my own. I spend most of my time trying to hide from them. I don't know why you would do it. But being there, seeing the institution, seeing the quality of the staff, seeing the extraordinary level of the curriculum, and most of all, seeing the students, it was awe-inspiring to me. And within a week, I had totally thrown John Miller under the bus. I was sidling up to Larry, telling him why he needed to fire his current journalism director and keep me there. Luckily, Larry, with all of his writing about Churchill and World War II, he's very wise to the dark arts of saboteurs, so Hillsdale was saved from that. But this is a way of saying that all of you who either work for the school or support the school, you are doing God's work, training the next generation, and I applaud all of you. When I saw what Hillsdale actually wanted me to speak about tonight, that one sentence, political corruption, the swamp be drained, I did have a brief internal giggle and thought that I could make this a very short evening. Come up here with the one word answer that everyone is expecting and then head straight to cocktails. But one of the problems, of course, with being a conservative is that you are a born optimist and that it is our job to solve problems. And so the answer is yes, the swamp can be drained. But I think what everyone needs to understand is that this is not something that's going to be a small or inconsequential endeavor. It's going to take a long time. And to do it, we first have to define what we mean by the swamp and what we mean by corruption. Because I think one of the problems that we have these days is that the definition of that has been defined by two extremes. On one side, we have a group of people that still have a dictionary definition of public corruption. And when we think of it in that terms, we tend to think of fraud, usually perpetrated for some sort of self-benefit, either for power or for money. And while I wouldn't say that those things don't happen anymore these days, they're pretty rare. Only in that we've actually come up with a lot of laws, anti-bribery laws, and campaign finance laws, transparency laws that are designed to guard against such obvious things like the Teapot Dome scandal or Tammany Hall, or even some of the excesses of the Nixon administration. That is, unless your name is Hillary Clinton, but that's an entirely different speech. And then on the other end, we tend to have people, mostly commentators, whose definition of corruption is anything that they don't like in politics whatsoever, which, of course, isn't really the way the world really works. There are going to be things in politics that none of us like. And so that's not really a fair definition of corruption either. But I think we do need to talk about it, because what we're seeing in D.C. is a new type of everyday and pernicious corruption. And it comes, in my mind, from, as many things do, the new partisan environment that we live in D.C., in which all that matters to people is that they win. And so all of the norms, all of the rules, all the regulations, all of the things that you think ought to have applied to you, they don't think apply to them anymore. All that matters is coming out on top. And that's the kind of corruption that now pervades Washington on a regular basis. It's what I call regular corruption. And nowhere did this corruption flourish more than in the past administration, which infused the federal government with a whole new level of partisanship, and moreover, managed to make a whole tens of thousands of career bureaucrats who we know from polls that we've done and surveys we've done tend to share the ideological inclinations of the past administration, brought them along with it, and we did have a new level of everyday corruption. So let's go through what actually counts as that. In my mind, one of the most common forms of corruption we have seen, especially over the past 8 years, is blatant regulatory excess. And I'm not talking here about rules with which we disagree. The executive branch is charged with significant powers of interpreting laws, coming up with regulations, many of which people on the conservative side or the liberal side might not always support. But if they're done within the general outlines of the law, it's something you live with. It's a consequence of an election. What I'm talking about here are rules that the people who put out outright knew contravened federal law, outright had admitted that they did not have the power to put together, and nonetheless went ahead forward with it. To me, in my mind, knowingly breaking the law is a form of corruption. When Barack Obama ran for the presidency in 2008, he put out a list of the top things he wanted to accomplish legislatively, and on those lists was a carbon cap and trade program. And he acknowledged that to do this, he would need to put it through Congress. And they tried. In 2009, Democrats Henry Waxman and Ed Markey actually passed a bill through the House that would have done that. It never made it through the Senate, and it never had a chance of making it through the Senate. I wrote about carbon policy for a long time. There were never more than maybe 40 or 42 votes to ever get something like this through the Senate. And yet, rather than admit defeat, the president turned to his EPA and instructed them to create the exact same program that he was trying to put through legislatively. They knew that they didn't have the authority to do so. And by the way, to show how little authority they did do to have that, it wasn't within a few months of it being passed that the courts had already halted it, and ultimately the Supreme Court put a stop on it. The Supreme Court was actually pretty busy during the Obama administration. It overruled him on major portions of Obamacare. It overruled him on key portions of his immigration policy. It overruled him on search and seizure rules, on the First Amendment, on public corruption cases. Some of you may know the Cato Institute's Ilya Shapiro. He's a scholar there. In an article in 2016, he noted that the Obama administration had lost more times in front of the Supreme Court than any other modern president. By 2016, he had a collective win rate in front of the Supreme Court of 45%. Now, some of you might think, well, you know, you win one, you lose one. But that's the standard we hold for personal injury lawyers, okay? The President of the United States, we hold them to a higher level. It is, after all, their duty. They put their hand up and promise to faithfully execute the office of the presidency, which includes faithfully executing our laws. Ronald Reagan's win rate was 75%. George H.W. Bush's was 70%. George W. Bush's was 60%. And by the way, that was only because he was stuck, by tradition, having to defend some of the things that the Clinton administration had stuck him with at the end of their term, which, by the way, their final term was a win rate of 35% in front of the Supreme Court. Now, at least some of the things that the Supreme Court were overruling weren't just regulatory actions. They're the other form of corruption, another form of corruption in Washington that we all have to be on guard against, which is, of course, executive orders. And again, the White House has vast discretion to put these out. And as long as they are within the general contours of the law, they should stand. But what I'm talking about here, again, are executive orders that obviously, blatantly cut across established law. Right now, this country is having a debate, Washington did over the last few weeks, over the status of Dreamers. This came about because the President Obama decided to put forward his DACA program, which suspended the law for this entire category of people, 1.8 million people at least. He had already come out at least two occasions and said that he didn't have the authority to do this, that he needed Congress to move in order to make it happen. And yet, nonetheless, when Congress didn't move, he issued an executive order. And that's just the beginning of some of the executive orders. Here's one of my favorite ones. And again, it gives you a sense of what we're talking about in terms of corruption at the highest levels. In January 2012, the Senate was taking a three-day break between sessions. They were not in recess. President Obama, nonetheless, unilaterally declared that a separate branch of government was in recess and used that period to appoint three individuals to the National Labor Relations Board. These were people that the unions had wanted him to appoint. They had been his biggest supporters during the campaign. And in keeping, as I said, with the win-at-any-cost mentality, he decided that he would intervene on a separate branch of government and declare when they were in and out of recess. He was sued, ultimately, and in 2014, the Supreme Court, on a 9-0 decision, called Noel Canning, unanimously, by the way, he lost even his own Supreme Court appointees, overruled him in a scathing decision, the essence of which was, essentially, you knew better than to do this. What are you thinking? And I think that's the point. It's one thing for scholars, for academics, to have a debate about fuzzy points of the law. It's an entirely different thing for an administration to adopt the mindset that you're going to put forward executive orders that you know are illegal, and then wait for the Supreme Court to police you. Because that was one of the great innovations of the Obama administration, is that they understood that you could go ahead and do these things, and it would take a long time for anyone to catch up with you. There's no immediate remedy when a president issues an executive order that's patently illegal, when his administration issues regulations that are patently illegal. You have to wait for the courts to catch up. And by the way, even when they do catch up, you've already accomplished your goal. And I think that's a really good example, the one I just told you about the National Labor Relations Board. It was 3 years later when the Supreme Court finally ruled, again unanimously, that the president had incontrovertibly and unconstitutionally appointed people to an agency. And even though the court was willing at that time to come out and stop and say that it had to be removed, it did not prove willing to reverse any of the thousands of decisions that that unconstitutional board had issued in the 3 years before it took for the Supreme Court to catch up with it. And again, I call that a form of corruption.
Baldwin's Transmissions and Auto Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call or stop by the shop on Highway 17 South in New Bern. Baldwin will give you the options. They can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they'll rebuild your existing transmission if that's what you prefer. Baldwin also does a variety of minor auto repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pumps. Count on Baldwin Transmission and Auto Repair, your transmission physician, Highway 17 South in New Bern.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com. Panicelli's Pizzeria in River Bend features delicious handmade Italian dishes like lasagna, spaghetti, fettuccine alfredo, stromboli, calzone, and many more. And now Panicelli's has home delivery. Panicelli's uses only the freshest ingredients, and they have fantastic New York-style pizza in four sizes or by the slice. Panicelli's Pizzeria also has great salads and subs. So today, head to River Bend, and Panicelli's is at 40 Shoreline Drive, or call Panicelli's Pizzeria for home delivery.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Here's another common form of corruption you see in Washington these days. Regulators who abuse their authority and who abuse the law to inflict punitive measures on political rivals. That same NLRB that I was talking about for a while had an acting general counsel named Leif Solomon. Again, never confirmed by the Senate. He couldn't get enough votes, but he managed to run the joint for an entire year. And at one point, Boeing, some of you may remember this, intended to move in a major part of its manufacturing facilities from its very unionized, regulated state down to South Carolina, which was a right-to-work state. Leif Solomon penned an opinion, all on his own, that it invented out of whole cloth a theory saying that somehow it was illegal for Boeing to start a factory in a different state. Think about how you come up with that. But he managed to do it. I remember Don McGahn, some of you may recognize the name, he's currently the general counsel to the Trump administration, telling me about his own time as a federal election commissioner. And he said he watched this year after year. He watched the career staff there, whose job it is to make the first evaluation on any complaints that came in about political campaigning, and then decide whether or not to move those complaints on to the commissioner. Sit for months and develop novel legal theories about how they could bring down Republican groups, even though Democratic groups who've been accused of the same thing were let off. These are the kind of disparity in the way law is applied in Washington that happen routinely. We have a Justice Department, speaking of corruption, that became ace at actually going after other politicians on public corruption charges. The prosecutors who brought suit against former Alaska Senator Ted Stevens, and by the way, a suit that cost him his 2008 election and handed Democrats a filibuster-proof majority that they then used to pass Obamacare and other things like the stimulus, they were found later to have engaged in, quote, reckless professional misconduct for actions that included withholding exculpatory evidence from the defense.
The Supreme Court recently overturned the Justice Department's conviction against former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell, noting that if the Justice Department had been allowed to get away with the standard that it used to convict him of corruption, that pretty much every politician in the United States would be subject to such charges. A U.S. District Court judge, and this is one of my favorite, I've got to love this, 2 years ago ordered more than 1,000 attorneys, and I'm not making that up, 1,000 in the Justice Department's Civil Division to undergo remedial ethics training. And it came after members of that division were found to have deliberately misled the judge about the president's policies. Deliberately. That isn't a mistake. It's corruption. And, of course, we have the IRS targeting scandal, in which career officials, at the prodding of Democrats and the President of the United States, targeted and attacked hundreds of conservative nonprofit groups representing tens of thousands of Americans. They sent them harassing letters. They frightened them into thinking that they could be sent to jail. They refused to grant them their constitutional right to operate and speak, not just in the 2010 midterm elections, but in the 2012 presidential elections. We know from emails and congressional investigations that Lois Lerner, who headed up this effort, knew exactly what she was doing, knew it likely violated the law, knew, we know from those emails too, that she was a virulent partisan, in line with many of the policies that were being presented by the administration, who hated conservatives and their growing influence in elections. And she knew, too, that she had to hide all of this from the public. And despite knowing all of this, by the way, not one single person has yet to be held account in that targeting scandal. Lois Lerner retired with full retirement benefits from the federal government. And that brings me to talk what I think now is the most nefarious form of everyday corruption that we see, and we're seeing it happen right now, even with a change of administration. And that is the nonstop effort to shield government officials from any accountability and to enable and continue to enable all the behavior that I just described. You go back and look through the past year, 8 years, we had a fast and furious gun walking scandal that by most estimates has cost hundreds of Mexicans their lives, potentially at least one American border agent. It took years to get the bottom of it because the Department of Justice refused to hand over its documents. And to be clear, there was no question that this was a case of government dereliction. A final Inspector General report ultimately recommended that no less than 14 individuals be subject to discipline. And yet Attorney General Eric Holder was so determined to make sure that nobody found out about this that he ended up becoming the first cabinet official in the history of the United States to be held in contempt of Congress. We had a Veterans Affairs administration that sat for years on the news of waiting lists and of people dying. Only after the news broke did we find out how long this had been going on and to what lengths the department had gone to hide it from congressional overseers. If you want to know why Ms. Lerner has never been held to account, I'll give you one reason. In 2014, Congress, the House, passed a resolution of contempt against her for lying to them. And they sent it over to the Justice Department, which under the statute, and it is very clearly written, shall refer it to a U.S. attorney who then shall bring it in front of a grand jury. It was duly sent to a U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, a man named Ronald Machen, who was an Obama appointee. He sat on it for 11 months. And on the day he resigned, he sent a letter to Speaker John Boehner saying that he was refusing to take any action. The exact same thing happened when the House sent their contempt resolution to the Justice Department against Eric Holder. No action was ever taken. We have a former Secretary of State who set up a private server, and she knew it was against the rules in order to shield any of her communications while she was in office from the public. And she then deleted all of those communications and told us to just trust her that she had retained all that mattered. We know the inner drive to keep secret the way she had intersected, her foundation work, with her government work, she allowed classified information to flow over those unsecure lines. And yet we also know from recent text messages that have come out
that the investigation in her was absolutely politically tainted. We have FBI agents pointing out to each other that the FBI ought to be careful not to put too many people on her case because they wouldn't want to offend the future president of the United States of America. And of course, we have the most worrying situation of all, which is an FBI department that looks to have been used as a pawn for a political campaign. This is an FBI that for months defied congressional subpoenas in order to keep quiet any of the information into its probe. The House Intelligence Committee sent it a subpoena, a duly sworn subpoena, all the way back in August. It was January before it responded to it, and only then because both House Intelligence Committee Devin Nunes and Speaker Paul Ryan had said that FBI Director Christopher Wray and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein would be held in personal contempt if they didn't finally hand over the goods. Everyone should understand what's happened here. The media, Democrats have done a very good job of muddying the waters on this issue. But what we have here is very, very clear. We had one presidential campaign gin up opposition research, which was funneled to the FBI and then used as an excuse and a justification to spy on a rival presidential campaign. And if you don't think that is as scary as it gets in terms of law enforcement and misuse of power, it is. And there is no wonder that they didn't want all of this to come out. What we have learned since it did come out is that not only that we had a campaign's opposition research as the basis for a FISA warrant, there was a Justice Department employee whose wife was working for that opposition research firm. The main source behind the opposition research document was a former spy who has now been accused of lying to the FBI. And his sources for that document included Clinton political operatives.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition established by Tommy and David Moore's parents over 70 years ago. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week at our three locations in New Bern, Winterville, and Moorhead City. We also cater and deliver to your home, workplace, church, or school, anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. Once again, you're listening to Kimberly Strassel giving a speech on political corruption, Can the Swamp Be Drained? And this is by Hillsdale College. It was given at the 2018 National Leadership Seminar. So let's continue listening to Kimberly Strassel.
So these are some of the examples of the problem, what it is that we're dealing with and what counts as public corruption these days. I think the other thing that we have to ask ourselves is, what's the environment that has allowed this to happen? How did we get to this point that this has become routine and every day? I think there's two things in particular, and that when they're combined, they create this open field for this kind of corruption. One, and it's one of these things that we all know in our mind, but we don't necessarily realize the full implication of, and it's simply the size of government. Now, if you go and you talk to the media and they put out their stories, they will point out that there hasn't been an enormous shift in the size of government over the last 30 years. They point out that back when Reagan was president, there was 1.7 million employees, and today there are only 2 million employees. Now, I would like to think that an additional 300,000 people in any environment is significant. I'm glad I'm not speaking tonight to 300,000 people, by the way. Slightly different than the size of this room. But the important thing here, the difficulty of keeping track of just an additional 300,000 people, because that's your job when you're trying to look after the swamp. And to give you an idea of what these 300,000 people can get up to, this is one of my favorite stories of all time from government over the past 8 years. In 2012, the Department of Justice announced a plea agreement with a guy named John Beale. Anybody remember this name? See, I think that's significant that nobody even remembers this because it's so common and happens so often. This was a 64-year-old guy. He'd had a 23-year career at the Environmental Protection Agency. Turns out that when he first applied to the EPA in 1989, he claimed to have a career as an assistant in the Senate. Later turns out that that was entirely fictitious and he'd never worked for government before. 5 years later, he came to the EPA as a dual employee, saying that, in fact, he was also a CIA agent. And this is why he needed to not show up to work for months at a time, because he was on secret missions for the CIA. Okay, nobody ever checked up on that for 23 years. Okay? Well, it was 13 years. Between 2000 and 2013, Beale was absent from work for a total of 2.5 years on secret Langley missions. Okay? He spent $60,000 on undercover trips that turned out to be visits to his relatives in Los Angeles. He spent another $18,000 to get a handicap spot in Washington for the illness he claimed he contracted while he was serving in Vietnam. Of course, he had no illness, and he'd never served in Vietnam. Here's my favorite part. In May of 2011, Beale said he was retiring, and the entire department held a big goodbye party for him. And then nobody noticed that he was still on the payroll for the next 18 months while he did not show up for work. Okay, these are some of the 300,000 extra additional people you have to keep track of in Washington. By the way, he was one of the most highly paid people at the EPA, because he'd worked there for so long and done such good work not showing up for 2.5 years on his spy missions that nobody noticed. And nobody noticed when he was gone. So there's a lot of people to keep track of and a lot of ability for them to do mischief. The second part of this is that we also live in a U.S. government, the size and scope of which is now unparalleled to anything we've seen in the past. I think it's fair to say that we today live in what is increasingly an administrative state. There used to be a time when those who were appointed at the top, those who were politically accountable, actually had a shot at keeping track of everything that their departments were trying to do and holding some people to account. But in a day when the EPA is trying to regulate every lawnmower for its carbon emissions and regulate every puddle in the country, and when the IRS is responsible for administering 80,000 pages of federal tax code, and when the Health and Human Services Department is running healthcare for practically everyone in the country, the bureaucrats are going to be in charge. It's impossible for you to have any oversight. And moreover, they're in charge of programs, and I think this is important, that precisely because they are so big and so sweeping, they are designed to fail. They cannot possibly succeed. You cannot have a Veterans Affairs Administration that, with government-run health care, can be expected to take care of the number of veterans that they have promised to take care of and do it well. And so, of course, there are going to be waiting lists. And of course, because we live in a country that does not accept such things, you're going to have bureaucrats that are lying and cheating and trying to cover it up. So in a way, we've also allowed government to grow to such a size that we're almost guaranteeing these kind of scandals come down the pike. So you take these two things, 2 million federal employees with sweeping discretion over what they can do, and limitless programs that are beyond the size of anything we've ever done, which are beyond accountability by those in charge. And then you add to this what I mentioned at the beginning, this partisan approach, this win at every cost. And you put that attitude at the top of these federal bureaucracies, and you let it filter down through the administration. And of course, you're going to get all the corruption just listed, because they take their cue from the top. If Hillary Clinton can set up her own email server, why can't every federal employee talk off the grid? And by the way, they do. I have written more about government scandals than I care to admit. And one of the central features of every single one is a number of government employees that were hiding their communication from FOIA requests and from transparency, which, by the way, ought to be your first sign that something's going on, because if you're not willing to do what you do in the open, it's probably because you're doing something wrong. We still don't know, by the way, to this day, everything that Lois Lerner did at the IRS, and you want to know why? Because we know from her email records that she went out of her way to conduct almost all of her internal conversations on a special IRS instant messaging system that she went and found out and made sure was not tracked by the federal government. There's a great email when she says, "Is any of this recorded?" Someone said no, and she said, "Perfect." Again, if the EPA is going to concoct an entire carbon regulation program outside of legislation, why shouldn't every bureaucrat go beyond what's allowed by law? That's how you get officials issuing arbitrary regulations and fines. That's how you get 1,000 Justice Department officials that need remedial ethics training. And why you get entire units of the IRS that didn't even blink an eye when they received orders to target thousands of Americans on the basis of their political affiliation. Just think about that. Dozens of career IRS officials were involved in this scheme, and nobody blew the whistle for 4 years. They all thought it was an okay thing to do.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition established by Tommy and David Moore's parents over 70 years ago. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week at our three locations in New Bern, Winterville, and Moorhead City. We also cater and deliver to your home, workplace, church, or school, anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out RightWingGranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to RightWingGranny.com.
Y'all ready for this? The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
So that's your swamp, people. We've now defined the problem. And knowing all that, you might think I might have been justified in coming up here and just moving straight to drinks. But here's the good news. The good news is that I'm not alone in having realized some of these problems out there. Far from it. This is a growing conversation in Washington. It's growing understanding that this is something we have to focus on specific in and of itself, that it's not going to fix itself, that there needs to be deliberate actions taken to change what's going on there. Now, President Trump's way of summing this up in a kind of Twitter-like sentence is, we need to drain the swamp, which is a good overarching theory. But we actually have a lot of people around him and in Congress and in outside watchdog groups and in grassroots organizations that have been thinking far more deeply about how you actually go about doing that. And we're starting to get some really good proposals. I think the quickest way you can do it, problem is that it isn't long term, the quickest way is that you get leaders into the White House and around the president in the White House and in these departments that are absolutely determined to give the swamp less to work with and to reset the rules of the road. Because, by the way, the best way you can cut down on this is to have fewer regulations, have fewer things that they can cause mischief with. And on this specific question, with just a few exceptions, I give the Trump administration not just an A, but an A++++. They have been amazing. We are currently witnessing the greatest era of deregulation ever. Okay, and I don't make that comparison to Reagan or anyone else. It's ever. And part of that is because the Trump administration had a great amount to work with when it came into office, given its predecessors. But you may remember in his first State of the Union, the president promised that he would eliminate two regulations for any new one that was created. By the latest statistics, which I just got from the OMB before I showed up here, that ratio currently stands at 22 eliminated to 1. They have already got rid of 68 major regulations, which is no small feat, and they have a list of 450 that are on the block in the coming year. Now, some of this has been agency action, but some of it, and I think Congress deserves its fair share of applause here too, via the very aggressive use of something called the Congressional Review Act, which allows Congress, with a simple majority in both houses, to overrule regulations that were put into effect in the last 6 months. This Republican Congress, to its credit, used that authority with incredible alacrity to get rid of some of the worst final rulemaking of the Obama era. You've also had some incredible folks that have come from the outside that are all about reining in these bureaucracies. Just last week, I wrote a piece about Mick Mulvaney at the Office of Management and Budget, who is a rock star. He's a rock star. He is in a fight at the moment, and this may seem like a little thing, but it's actually enormous. He's in a fight right now with the Treasury Department to require the IRS for the first time in 40 years to submit its rulemaking to White House review. It has never had to do that before. And think about how important that is. This is an IRS that doesn't like this president, isn't exactly huge fans of Republican Congress that's been beating on it for the last 6 months, and is about to be in charge of implementing the entire Republican tax reform. I think a little bit of oversight would be a good thing. This is the same Mr. Mulvaney, another one of my favorite recent stories, who's currently acting administrator of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They're not very happy about that, by the way. if you haven't followed this fight, the woman that his predecessor installed in that job as he was on the way out the door is still pretending that she's the acting administrator.
She's still sending emails out to people. Just no one's listening to her. But she's camped out at a building down the street. It really is a bizarre situation. Anyway, the CFPB has these extraordinary powers. They're called examination powers, where they can go choose any company out there and then go in and look through any of its records and continue fishing through until they find a charge to bring, which isn't exactly how most of us think we go about justice. Mr. Mulvaney, as one of his first acts, informed the CFPB regulators that before they could go ask a company for all of its records, they actually had to develop a theory of wrongdoing. This is considered revolutionary in modern Washington. You've got Scott Pruitt at the EPA. He's redirecting his employees to go to the top and most basic obligation of the EPA, to clean up Superfund sites. The Environmental Protection Agency might actually start devoting its resources to cleaning up the 1,300 Superfund sites across the country, significant numbers of which have been on the list for 30 years. But they all got put to the side because it was much more important to come up with a carbon agenda. I recently had a great conversation with Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, who told me that when he showed up, he found out it had become routine at the Interior Department under his predecessors to demand enormous mitigation fees every time a company applied for a basic permit. So you want a basic drilling permit. It's allowed under federal law and regulation. But you go to Interior, Interior says, we're only going to give you that permit if you give us like a bajillion dollars to do this restoration project over here. And I remember Zinke said to me, if you had that transactional demand in any other forum outside of government, the word we would use for it is extortion. And as I'm not going to engage in government extortion, that practice is now at an end. So all this is encouraging, but of course the problem is that it's administration specific. You can reduce these rules, you can set these new guidelines, but the minute a new administration comes in, they can reverse it. So of course, the most long-lasting thing we can do to change all this is the hardest, and that's permanently reducing the size and scope of government legislatively. Smaller the swamp, the fewer the scandals. I can remember very well a congressman calling me up in the wake of the IRS scandal and asking me, running by all these potential rules and regulations, he said, do you think any of this will help? And I said, do you really want to fix this? Come up with a flat tax. Because when you have 80,000 IRS employees and they have 74,000 pages of a federal tax code that they have discretion over, you are going to have a repeat of this at some point. Take away their discretion to do it, take away the size of government, and you take away a lot of the swamp. The recent tax form is a good step in that direction. Dramatically simplifies the codes, reduces the subsidies, gets rid of the deductions. There are all the things that allow the IRS to call up those audits. We've now also passed a Veterans Administration reform that's a step toward introducing more market forces into veterans' health care and reducing federal management. We've gotten rid of the individual mandate in Obamacare and other small parts of Obamacare that give the state too much control. But these are still baby steps. We've got a long way to go. There's other things that people are contemplating legislatively that could also restore some accountability. One is legislation that would require far more aggressive transparency among federal officials and real penalties for noncompliance. We currently, and this is an astonishing idea, rely on the word of federal employees that they are actually setting forth and sending forth all of their government communications or all of the communications that they do on private devices to their government accounts. We know that's not happening. We know everyone's hiding things. We've got the technology today to allow people to have both a private account and a government account on their phone. No one should be allowed anymore to conduct business offline outside of the people's views. There's also ideas to move certain bureaucratic decision-making back under the control of accountable officials. Why on earth was the IRS ever in charge of deciding what was politically acceptable among nonprofit groups? We have a body called the Federal Election Commission that was specifically set up to do that. It's got three Republicans, three Democrats. It takes four votes to move on it. And we did that specifically to make sure that there was no political mischief. We don't want the IRS or the Securities and Exchange Commission, the Federal Communications Commission, telling companies, nonprofits, or broadcasters what they're allowed to do politically. We need to make sure that people who are accountable are taking their again. But to me, the most exciting part of the swamp draining project that's going on is something that has gotten almost no attention, but I think in the long term is going to be the most important. If you go out right now, there's been a lot of attention the White House has got for its judicial picks, and they deserve it because these are very good picks. But when you look, all of these picks have two things in common. It hasn't got much attention. One is that they rock star jurists, but the other is that they are, every single one of them, experts in administrative law. Because there's been an entire generation of judges that have come up, and they have understood the threat from overregulation, from the abuse of executive orders, all the things that I have mentioned. So when you look at Neil Gorsuch in the Supreme Court, Steve Gratz on the Eighth Circuit, Don Willett on the Fifth Circuit, this is the most notable aspect of them. Judge Gorsuch, one of the most remarkable things about all of his jurisprudence over all of his years was his outright opposition to what's known as Chevron deference. And I know a lot of you out there know what that means. But Chevron's a 1984 Supreme Court decision, and it holds that judges must defer to agency interpretations of federal law in any case where the law seems ambiguous. This is why we have the administrative state that we have today. Judge Gorsuch has ruled again and again that this is an abdication of judicial duty, and he is right. And I think what you're going to begin seeing is in a judiciary that is not going to take a lot of the nonsense that's coming out of the swamp anymore.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
So, smaller government, accountability, transparency, checks and balances. There is something very encouraging about knowing that the very mechanisms our founders created to take care of everything else could also drain the swamp. Our task is to call out the corruption as we see it, label it correctly,
and to think more creatively about how we apply those fixes to make sure we get rid of it in the end. Thank you so much for your patience tonight.
Well, once again, we've been listening to Kimberly Strassel, her speech, Political Corruption, Can the Swamp Be Drained? That was given back in April of 2018 at the National Leadership Seminar, What is American Greatness? Again, that's sponsored by Hillsdale College. And Hillsdale College is known for not receiving any federal funds, and they're teaching constitutional conservative values. And CCTA is proud to offer a scholarship to to Hillsdale College. And we just recently presented our scholarship for the 2019 year. And we are building back up to, again, present a scholarship in the upcoming year. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's presentation. Again, we were all out of town for our normal recording, so I thought this would be some good filler to bring you up to date on some of the things that are going on in D.C. involving draining the swamp. And maybe you understand a little bit more about what the swamp is, how it was created, and what's taking place to try to eliminate it and make some changes. You know, you can be part of that process, and that's because we've got these upcoming elections, and you have the opportunity to exercise your right to vote and go and vote some of those people out of the swamp. Just get rid of them completely. Some of them have been in there for many, many years, and the voters, for whatever reason, have been sending them back to D.C. Well, it's time to break that process. Stop doing that. You know, they've got a track record to look at. They've proven themselves one way or the other. So you need to investigate their record, look at it, and determine if they're being primaried, if they've got other people running against them. Find out about their opponents and decide which would be the better. And go ahead and make that move. Go to the polls, cast your vote for what you think is the best qualified candidate, the one that's going to best uphold the constitutional principles that we would like to live under as this country was founded on. And let's try to get that swamp drained out. Give the president all the help he needs and do our part with that. Upcoming meeting I'm working on right now is trying to put together a candidate form for the four candidates that will be running for Walter Jones's third district seat, and that election is coming up in September. And you've got a little bit of time to do your research on those candidates and learn more about them, and we're going to try to help you out by sponsoring a candidates form. I'll give you more information on that probably on next week's show, so you'll have a little more to go on. Again, thank you for tuning in to CCTA Wake Up Call, and you can find out more about CCTA, Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, by going to our website. That is cctaxpayers.com. You can go there and click on the Wake Up Call button and listen to all our archived radio shows. Or you can just browse around the site and look at our vetting reports that have been posted up there and some of the other things our Legislative Action Committee has posted up there. We also, on our homepage, will give you the information on our next upcoming meeting as soon as we have that information available. Again, it's the third Tuesday of every month, and it's free and open to the public. Once again, I'm your host, Rick Hopkins, and I thank you for tuning in to CCTA Wake Up Call.
The CCTA truly appreciates their sponsors because their support makes it possible for Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association to bring all of you Wake Up Call every Sunday. Those sponsors include Professional Auto Services on Country Club Road in New Bern, Gladys Sussell, Wellness Educator and Nutrition Consultant, Panicelli's Pizzeria in River Bend. Other great supporters are RightWingGranny.com with a unique perspective on the news, B&J Seafood on US 70 in New Bern, the North Carolina Fisheries Association, Baldwin Transmission and Auto Repair on Highway 17 South in New Bern, also the County Compass, serving Pamlico, Beaufort, Craven, and Carteret counties, Dr. J. Singleton, Moore's Old Time Barbecue. Tune in for the CCTA Wake-Up Call every Sunday on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240.